flown. I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours. And ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy's for sale. I must take a trip to California and leave my poor sweetheart alone. If he has a dog, he won't be lonesome, and the doggy will have a good home. How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy's for sale. I read in the papers there are robbers with flashlights that shine in the dark. My love needs a doggy to protect him and scare them away with one bark. I don't want a bunny or a kitty. I don't want a parrot that talks. I don't want a bowl of little fishies. He can't take a goldfish for a walk. How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy's for sale.
This is Bruce Kaplan, welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. I hope you're all having a fantastic weekend. Tonight we begin our program with one of the most interesting episodes of the program Suspense that was ever on the air. It duplicates the 1938 wonderful movie that Alfred Hitchcock made called The Lady Vanishes. I think you'll really find it intriguing. And then we're going to conclude with a man who started out as a great singer, one of Broadway's best, and then in 1944, he made a movie called Murder My Sweet. His name was Richard Powell, Dick Powell, and tonight you're going to listen to his famous detective radio drama, Richard Diamond, Private Eye. I think you'll really enjoy the program. If you have any messages that you'd like to send to me, just write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com. Again, have a fantastic weekend. Thank you so much for tuning in. And now we'll enjoy our great shows.
Suspense. The story you are about to hear first appeared in the pages of the Detroit Free Press in the summer of 1889. At the time the Paris World's Fair was celebrating the 100th anniversary of the fall of the Bastille and the beginning of the French Revolution, it reappeared in the London Daily Mail in 1911. 2 years later, Mrs. Belloc Lowndes used it as the basis of her novel, The End of Her Honeymoon. And sometime after that, it became the storyline of another novel, She Who Was Helena Cass, by Lawrence Rising. As recently as 1951, it cropped up again as a British motion picture, So Long at the Fair. It is a hardy tale, a sort of modern folk tale. It has never been proved, it has never been disproved. And one can only wonder if in the dread secret archives of the police judiciaire in Paris, the real facts are recorded in fading ink on yellowing paper, locked forever from a curious and intrigued world. No one knows. Perhaps no one ever will know. But we can guess. And this, we guess, is what might have happened to lovely young Cynthia Winship and her mother as they arrived at the Hotel Crillon one beautiful summer day, the day the great Paris World's Fair opened.
Bonjour, madame. Puis-je vous aider?
I don't understand French. Is there anyone here who speaks English?
Mais bien sûr, madame. What can I do for you?
Oh, well, my daughter and I have just arrived from Marseille. We're on our way home from India. And we...
Oh, I am afraid, madame, we cannot accommodate you.
But you must. I'm not feeling at all well. And I telegraphed ahead for a reservation.
Ah, ça c'est différent. The name, please.
Oh, Winship. Mrs. Winship and daughter.
Mrs. Winship. Ah, yes. And it is indeed most fortunate you did telegraph, madame. For you I have reserved the last room in the hotel.
I'm so relieved.
Would you be so kind as to register?
Yes, of course. Here's Cynthia, my dear. You may as well learn how to do this for yourself.
Yes, mama. Where do I write?
There. In that line.
Oh, I see.
Voila. You are fatigued from your journey, yes? I shall have the boy show you to your rooms at once. Chasseur?
Oui, monsieur.
Madame et Mademoiselle Winship are numéro 342, tout de suite.
Tout de suite, monsieur.
These are your baggage, madame?
Yes. These six.
Voilà le bagage. Six pièces.
This way.
Keep your eye on that porter, Cynthia. Don't trust these Frenchmen.
I don't think you'll make off without things, mama.
Here we are, room 342. Entrez, madame.
Oh, what a lovely big room. Look, and the park out there. Oh, a square with the statues in it.
The ladies désire quelque chose encore?
No, thank you. Here.
Oh, merci, madame. Thank you, ladies.
Oh, mama, it's like something out of a book.
Yes, my dear, that's just the trouble with Paris. On the surface, it's so attractive. But underneath, it's evil.
The furniture. The gilt clock. All this lovely marble table. Oh, mama, everything is so French.
I'll be very glad to be where everything's so English by this time tomorrow. Now, come away from that window and help me get him to something comfortable. There's a dear.
Yes, mama.
I don't know when I've been so tired. Oh, I just can't seem to catch my... Oh.
Mama. Mama, what's the matter? Mama, speak to me. Here, I'll get you up in the bed. There. And I'll loosen your corset. Here, Mama. Here are the smelling salts. Now breathe deeply, Mama. Mama! The telephone. I've got to get a doctor.
Hello, j'écoute.
Hello. Hello, operator. Will you please send the doctor up to room number... Number 342.
Pardon? Qu'est-ce que mademoiselle désire?
Will you please send the doctor to room number 342?
Je ne comprends pas. Qu'est-ce que mademoiselle désire?
A doctor. A doctor.
Ah, oui, un docteur. Oui, mademoiselle, tout de suite.
Wasn't long, although it seemed like an eternity before the doctor arrived, accompanied by the manager of the hotel. To my great relief, the doctor spoke English. He felt Mother's pulse, took her temperature, and did the usual things doctors do, and then he turned to the hotel manager.
La jeune femme. À quelle pensée?
Pas un mot.
Vous en êtes sûr?
Absolument.
Alors je peux parler à mon aise. Monsieur, ceci c'est une affaire très sérieuse. N'ayez pas un air effrayé lorsque je vous mettrai au courant.
Entendu.
Cette femme était de la peste.
While they talked in this language and I couldn't understand, I looked from one face to the other, trying to read from their expression how serious my mother's illness was. They were as casual as though they were ordering dinner. Finally, I could stand it no longer. They must... You must tell me, what is the matter with my mother?
Mademoiselle, your mother is ill. Yes, seriously ill. It is a collapse, due perhaps to the strain of traveling. However, a week or two of absolute rest and she will...
A week or two? Oh, no, but we're going on to England tomorrow.
That would be out of the question. She cannot be moved for at least several days. The next 24 hours will be critical.
Oh, Mama. Oh, mademoiselle,
you must not break down too. I need your help.
Yes. Yes, doctor.
Immediately. I need some medicine. Will you fetch it for me?
Oh, but...
I must not leave your mother for a moment during these critical hours. Here. I will write down this address and a little message to my wife.
Your wife?
Yes. I have the medicine already prepared at my home. It will be much faster to go there for it than to a pharmacy. There are very few chemists who have the ingredients.
But couldn't you telephone?
Alas, mademoiselle, I have no telephone.
Or a messenger, perhaps.
Mademoiselle does not know Paris, en fait. With the exposition opening, nowhere can you find a reliable messenger. They are all selling souvenirs. No, mademoiselle will accomplish the errand more rapidly herself.
Here is the address, mademoiselle. 24 bis rue Val de Grâce. And here is the message to give to my wife.
But I don't know Paris at all. I'm a total stranger.
I am sure the manager here will give the necessary instructions to the coachman.
But certainly, if mademoiselle is ready.
Before I quite knew what was happening, I was seated in a rickety carriage outside the hotel with the doctor's message clutched in my hand, while the hotel manager gave valuable directions to the coachman.
It is arranged, mademoiselle. Jacques is one of our most trusted coachmen. He will get you to the doctor's house and back in safety.
Thank you so much, sir. And you'll look after my mother, won't you?
But of course. Of that you may be sure. Au revoir, mademoiselle.
Allons-y, bébé.
I felt completely helpless. Alone in the foreign city where no landmark was familiar and the language had gibberish to my ears. In the charge of an evil-looking coachman driving an ancient carriage at snail's pace, up and down endless wide boulevards, across traffic-choked squares, knowing that my mother's life might well depend on the speed with which I accomplished my errand. Driver, can't you go any faster? This is a matter of life or death.
On fait ce qu'on peut, mademoiselle. Elle est vieille, mon cheval. Mais elle marche.
When we left the hotel, we had crossed a huge square with statues around it and turned into a wide avenue which led up a gentle incline at the top of which was a huge arch. But before then, we turned off into narrower streets. It must have been 20 minutes later when we turned into another wide boulevard and I saw another huge arch up ahead. Or was it the same arch? Coachman!
Hey, mademoiselle!
Haven't we passed that arch before?
Regardez, mademoiselle. Voilà l'Arc de Triomphe.
I don't want to fight things. I want to go to this address directly. Don't you understand? Now, please, take me there at once.
On fait ce qu'on peut, mademoiselle. Soyez tranquille. Paris est une grande ville.
At last, we turned into a narrow street and pulled up before a grim, gray house. The blue enamel sign on the wall read 24 bis. I jumped out of the cab almost before it stopped. Rushed up the 3 stone steps and pulled at the bell knob. Oh, hurry, hurry, hurry.
Bonjour, mademoiselle.
The doctor sent me for the medicine.
Monsieur le docteur n'est pas ici.
Here. Here, read this.
Retenez cette jeune femme aussi longtemps que possible. c'est de la plus haute importance pour l'avenir de Paris et même de la France. Entrez, mademoiselle.
Thank you.
Quand vous ne pourriez plus la faire attendre, donnez-lui une bouteille de pastille inoffensive. Je vous en prie.
The doctor's wife took their reading and rereading the notice, so she didn't understand it until I thought I would scream. Please, please hurry. Get me the medicine. Look, it's my mother. She may be dying. I must get back to her. Please, hurry.
Asseyez-vous, mademoiselle.
She pointed to a chair.
Attendez.
Slowly walked down the hall and closed the door behind her. I waited and waited, and I began to wonder. I wondered about the time the cab had taken to get here, about that arch that looked so familiar. And I was torn by the 100 nameless anxieties that torture you when your nearest and dearest are ill. And then I heard something that froze my blood. A telephone. A telephone. Clearly ringing somewhere in the house. Now, the doctor had said he had no telephone. That was the reason why I must come all this way for the medicine. Oh. Oh, no, it couldn't be in this house. It must be next door or across the street, of course. Of course, that was where the sound was coming from. No. It was the voice of the doctor's wife answering the phone. Oh, no. What monstrous plot was this? I felt my scalp crawl with terror. My brain pounded. My head felt as though it would burst. I wanted to scream. To run out of this awful house. To run all the way across Paris to the bedside of my mother.
Voilà, mademoiselle. La médecine.
Thank you.
Au revoir,
thank you. Now, driver, please. Please, in the name of your own mother, hurry. Back to the hotel as fast as possible, please.
On fait ce qu'on peut, mademoiselle. Allons-y, bébé.
I pleaded with the coachman. I begged him to hurry. I explained to him in tears that my mother was desperately ill. But the carriage never increased its speed. We crept across Paris just as slowly as we had come, and I was sure that I saw that same white arch 3 times. But at last, we crossed the great square with the statues in it, and I knew we were close to the hotel. Oh, please, please hurry.
On fait ce qu'on peut, mademoiselle.
Just beyond the great square, we turned up a narrow street, which shortly entered a wide circle, in the middle of which was a tall, slender monument. The driver swung around the monument and pulled up before the entrance of the hotel.
Here, voilà, mademoiselle.
I jumped out of the cabin and I saw the sign over the hotel entrance. It said, Hotel Ritz. Driver, you've taken me to the wrong hotel.
Eh?
I'm
no,
staying at the Hotel Trio. Look, I don't understand what you're saying, but I want you to take me to the Hotel Trio. She's stupid, man. Can't you understand? My mother's sick. You've taken more than 2 hours to get me to that doctor's house and back. Can't you understand?
Si vous auriez l'amabilité de me payer les 25 francs 50,
I looked around me. A small group of passers-by had stopped and were listening curiously to the argument. And then they joined in, taking sides. Everywhere I looked were foreign faces, strangers, enemies. And then, shouldering through the crowd, I saw a young man in tweed with a pipe clamped in his teeth. And before he had a chance to speak, I knew help had come.
I say, are you having some trouble?
Oh, thank heavens, an Englishman.
Yes, that's right. Now, what seems to be the matter?
I told him as rapidly as I could. He paid the mulish cab driver, popped me into another cab, and 5 minutes later, we walked into the lobby of the Hotel Creole. The manager was behind the desk. My mother, is she all right?
I beg your pardon?
My mother, Mrs. Winship, in 342, is she all right?
There is no Madame Winship in 342.
What?
342 is occupied by Monsieur Auguste Noy, a permanent guest.
Oh, no, you don't understand. I'm Cynthia Winship, don't you remember? 2 hours ago, you put me into a carriage to go to the doctor's house for some medicine for my mother.
I am afraid Mademoiselle is mistaken. I have never seen her before in my life.
Say, look here, what is this?
I swear to you, it is as I say. We signed the register less than 3 hours ago. We got in on the train from Marseille.
Right, well, we'll have a look at the register.
Yes, I'll show you. I'm in 342. Where's the register?
It is here, Mademoiselle. You may see for yourself. See, today's date. 13 guests registered, but I do not see any Mademoiselle or Madame Winship. Do you?
No.
Well, perhaps Mademoiselle is mistaken. Perhaps she is registered at some other hotel.
No, no, this is the hotel, the Creole. You were standing there when we arrived. You came to the room with the doctor. You put me in a carriage.
But I assure you, mademoiselle, these are fantasies.
Oh, now, wait, wait.
What is it?
The bellboy there, he carried our baggage. He'll remember.
Garçon.
Yes.
Do you recall carrying this young lady's luggage up to room 342 this afternoon?
No, monsieur.
But you were. There were six pieces. Don't you remember?
No, mademoiselle. J'ai perdu dans ma voiture.
He said he never saw you in his life before.
But this is monstrous, and it's impossible. My mother is somewhere in this hotel. What have you done with her? What have you done with her?
Well, now, how do you feel, Miss Winship?
Oh, better, thank you. The soup was nourishing.
Well, won't you have something else? A salad, a little roast?
No, no, thank you. Just a cup of tea, please.
Oh, certainly. Garçon?
Yes?
Does the tea for mademoiselle?
Tout de suite, monsieur.
I don't know how to thank you, mister. Oh, do you realize I don't even know your name?
Oh, well, it's Stanley. Bruce Stanley.
I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Stanley.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Mr. Stanley, you believe me, don't you?
Of course I do, Miss Winship.
We did register at that hotel. We were in room 342. Why, I can even describe the furnishings. There was a big window that went from the floor to the ceiling.
Well, I'm afraid every hotel room in Paris has windows like that.
No. Really?
Yeah.
Well, in this room, the drapes were plum-colored. And there was a marble-top table. Black marble it was. And a gilt clock. It had run down. The hands itself, I remember, at 3:20. The walls were covered in rose brocade, and the bedspread was a washed-out yellow. If I could get into that room, you would see that I'm not making this up.
No, I'm sure you aren't. Perhaps I can find a way to make them let you in the room.
Oh, can you?
Yes. I'm with the embassy, you know, undersecretary sort of thing. I believe that the British Empire has enough influence to change the mind of an obstinate Paris innkeeper.
Oh, then let's do it right away.
Well, I don't think that the might of Britain can move quite that fast. It's past dinner time, you know, but tomorrow we'll see.
I can't wait until tomorrow.
Well, I'm afraid you'll have to. We can do nothing with the people at the hotel. You saw that. We'll just have to be patient until tomorrow. I'll get a room for you tonight in a pension near the embassy.
You're very kind, Mr. Dennis.
Not at all.
Oh, no. Oh.
What is it?
I just thought of something. The doctor.
The doctor?
Yes. Yes, the one the hotel manager brought in to look after my mother. I still have his address somewhere here in my purse. Here it is. Now we must go there immediately. He can tell us about my mother.
Mm-hmm. 24 bis Rue Val de Grasse. Well, that's not far. It's just off the Boulevard Raspail, near Gare Montparnasse.
How long would it take to get there?
Oh, about 20 minutes.
20 minutes? It took over an hour this afternoon.
Oh, voilà, monsieur, 24 bis rue Val de Grasse.
Well, here we are.
Yes, this is the place.
Attendez une minute.
D'accord.
The house is dark.
Well, it is quite late.
I don't care. We've got to find out tonight.
C'est en bas.
Where is he?
He's there at the upstairs window.
Monsieur le docteur, c'est Mademoiselle Winship. Elle veut vous questionner de sa mère.
Je ne connais pas une demoiselle Winship.
Says he doesn't know you.
Oh, he must. Doctor, don't you remember this afternoon? You sent me here to your house for medicine for my mother.
Comprends pas l'anglais.
Says he doesn't understand English.
Oh, the liar. He does. He speaks perfect English.
Je vous conseille de n'interrompre pas le sommeil des gens reputables et vous en allez avant que j'appelle la police.
I'm sorry, Cynthia.
Oh, Bruce, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Oh, if it hadn't been for Bruce, I'm certain I should have gone out of my mind. He found a room for me at the pension near the embassy, where I spent a sleepless night. I tossed and I turned and I worried myself into an agony almost beyond endurance. Where was my mother? What had they done to her? Bruce called for me at 10:30 the next morning and took me back to the hotel. To my surprise, the attitude of the manager had changed completely.
But of course, Mademoiselle, may inspect room 342. We are only too glad to convince Mademoiselle that her mother is not, never was, in the Hotel Crillon. I personally will escort you to the room. This way, please, to the ascenseur.
Oh, Bruce, that terrible man, that horrible...
Mademoiselle, dear, don't worry. We'll get to the bottom of this.
Avez-vous, monsieur, dame?
Now, remember, Bruce, what I told you last night. You'll see. Plum-colored drapes. Black marble top table. Rose walls. And a gilt clock with the hand stopped at 3:20. You'll see.
Yes, indeed.
Voilà le troisième étage. This way. It was room 342. You wish to see, mademoiselle?
Yes, that's right. Third door to the right.
So, here we are.
You see, Bruce, I know where it is.
Yes, my dear.
Voilà. Enter, please.
Now, Bruce, you'll see the yellow bedspread. Oh, no.
Not quite the room you just described in the elevator, mademoiselle. The drapes are royal blue.
No.
A little dusty, I fear. I must have this room renovated. There is no marble top table.
No.
The clock, as you notice, is running.
No.
And right on time, it seems. The walls are not rose brocade, but yellow flowers
no.
for paper.
No.
No, my dear mademoiselle, you see how thoroughly mistaken you are.
No, no, no!
That's the story as it may have happened. The lady, Mrs. Winship, had vanished, the room completely redecorated overnight. A gigantic conspiracy of silence, so cruel as to cause a young girl to take leave of her senses. But the stakes were higher than the sanity of a pretty English tourist. Mrs. Winship was suffering from bubonic plague, which she had caught before leaving India. The doctor had recognized the symptoms at once, recognized, too, that she had no more than an hour to live. He had purposely sent Cynthia on a fool's errand. The hotel manager was in on the conspiracy, and the cab driver, and soon the British Embassy, the Quai d'Orsay, and the police judiciaire. For had it become known that there was a case of bubonic plague in Paris, the city would have been emptied of visitors. The World's Fair would have been a failure. The French franc would have fallen, and the very stability of the pound sterling would have been threatened. That's the whole story. Some years ago, Alexander Wolcott tracked down the man who first reported it in the Detroit Free Press in 1889 and asked him whether he had invented it or had heard it somewhere in his travels. And the Detroit reporter replied that he could not remember, which, as far as Mr. Wolcott was concerned, left the question still open. For, as he wryly observed, he doubted if any man could have invented a tale like The Vanishing Lady and then forgot that he had done so. What do you think?
Here transcribed is Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency. Put up or shut up.
Hi.
Oh, hi, Helen.
You busy?
Oh, like a hibernating bear.
No business?
I've seen more action than a bankrupt turtle farm.
Oh, things can't be that bad.
I'm even getting an echo in here.
Rick.
Really? Listen. Hello?
Hello?
See?
Rick, was that really an echo?
Oh, wait a minute. Hey, my girl wants to know if you're really an Echo.
I beg your pardon.
Honey, I'll call you back. This Echo has a man with it.
Bye.
Bye. Can I help you, sir?
I am looking for Mr. Richard Diamond.
Why?
Now, that's an extremely unique question. I want to sell him 10 tons of pig iron.
Well, I'm very sorry, but I made a New Year's resolution that I wouldn't build another battleship until I paid up my bill at the automat.
My name is Barr, David Barr. Now, if you'll stop talking like a television comedian, I would like to discuss a business arrangement.
Well, my name is Diamond, Richard Diamond. And if you're rolling in money, I'd be very happy to discuss any arrangement you could dream up.
How much do you charge, Mr. Diamond?
Well, that depends. Anything short of a felony, $100 a day in expenses.
How earthy?
Well, it keeps my ribs from showing.
Have you ever heard of me, Mr. Diamond?
Well, I have a feeling this may lose me a quick sale, but very frankly, Mr. Barr...
No matter, I can see by your clothes that your wardrobe must be fashioned exclusively by popular mechanics.
No. Well, okay, we've kicked it around. It's been fun, but I'm beginning to get winded. What do you want to see me for, Mr. Barr?
I want you to guard my store.
Store?
Yes, I have the most fashionable men's haberdashery and tailoring business on Madison Avenue.
And you want it guided?
Perhaps I should give you some background concerning the disgusting incidents that led me to your,
office.
For the lack of a more sordid description, yes, office.
I'm sure the whole background must be very disgusting.
2 nights ago, my shop was vandalized.
Somebody broke in and swiped something.
Yes, yes. To be exact, 1 blue serge suit.
One suit?
One. I reported the incident to the police, and they summed it up with the same brilliant observation as you. To quote the sergeant, somebody broke in and swiped something.
Now, look, Mr. Barr, don't tell me you want me to find that blue suit.
No, this was not the end of the trouble, Mr. Diamond.
Somebody lifted a hand-painted tie, maybe?
Naturally, my employees were questioned, and the following day the police returned to their little precinct, satisfied that somebody had merely...
busted in and swiped something.
Yes. Well, the following night, my shop was again the object of vicious vandalizing. This time, the party, or parties responsible, took every foot of blue serge material in the shop.
Oh, now, wait a minute. First somebody breaks in and takes 1 blue serge suit. The next night, all the blue serge material in the store is stolen. What's the matter? Did you run out of suits?
All my suits are custom tailored, Mr. Diamond.
Oh.
My stock of finished merchandise is generally sparse. We complete only 2 or 3 suits a day. The missing blue serge was hanging with 2 other suits. The property, of course, of one of my best customers.
And the thief didn't touch the other 2 suits?
No. And on the following night, the night of the second burglary, a gray flannel was left untouched.
The suit and the cloth stolen were both blue serge.
Correct. Naturally, I had to order another stock of the same material. It's in the shop now, and I should not be able to sleep a wink unless I was certain that it was safe.
And you want me to sit up with a blue serge?
Exactly. I am considerably interested in finding the motive behind these unusual robberies.
Oh, well, this is certainly a first in my life. I've sat up with a lot of things, but never 15 yards of blue serge. The illustrious Mr. Barr handed me a $100 retainer, ran a white glove over the top of my desk like an inspecting general, made an observation on the pursuit of happiness, and went out of my office faster than a bad molar at a dentist convention. We had agreed to meet at his, so I pasted the $100 bill to my instep, put the instep up on the desk, crossed the other instep over it, leaned back and dozed off, secure in the knowledge that money would never go to my head. Yeah?
Mr. Diamond, this is Mr. Barr.
Well, it isn't 6, is it?
It's 4:35. Mr. Diamond, am I correct in assuming that the moment you grabbed that $100, you became a member of my employ?
No, you're correct. $100 worth.
Then please come immediately to number 6 Park Avenue. Something's happened, and I feel a complete breakdown coming on.
Oh, come in.
What's happened?
Well, if this keeps up, I may be living on dream pills. I've been eating them like peanuts.
Well, maybe if you gave me a hint.
I have been robbed.
Well, didn't we go through this thing in
Here, I've been robbed here in my apartment.
What?
I came home, took a bath, went in to get dressed, opened my wardrobe, and to my complete horror, found 3 My only three blue serge suits were missing.
Oh, no.
A potent reaction. Oh, no. Now, why didn't I think of that?
I can't imagine. It's certainly simple enough.
We'll spend a whole day insulting each other after you solve this mystery. So for now, strain yourself and try looking like a detective with a $100 retainer in his pocket.
Well, it's not in my pocket. But if we go into that, I'll leave myself wide open. Show me your wardrobe. Mr. Barr's apartment was as overdone as he was. I stepped down into the living room and found myself wading through a carpet that called for a dog sled to negotiate it. The smell of incense made me keep looking back over my shoulder for the dancing girls. He led the way into a bedroom that George Washington wouldn't have slept in without an armed guard and opened his wardrobe. 2 dozen $300 suits stretched from one end of the closet to the other, and there was enough material in that wardrobe to drive a frustrated moth into a complete fit.
They were hanging right here in this space.
Are you sure they couldn't be at the cleaners?
They were here this morning.
Now, what's that on the bed? That's a blue serge suit.
Mr. Diamond, that is the suit I was wearing when I came into your office.
No, when I was so busy looking at your money, I...
Well, what is to be done?
Well, I got to admit, it's sure a strange one.
You are constantly coming up with the most astute observation.
Oh? Well, wait till I get around to your personality.
You'd really be a likable fellow, Diamond, if I could bring myself to look at you.
Oh, I'm not so bad. Think of what you must go through shaving every morning.
Oh, really, Diamond? What do you think is behind this ridiculous situation?
Very honestly, I don't know. Except the obvious. Somebody wants your blue serge suits and all the blue serge material you've got.
That blue serge on the bed is the last one I've got. Do you think this could be some kind of a practical joke?
Not very. It could get somebody 10 years.
Well, have you got any ideas at all?
Yes, I have. Take that last blue serge and hide it. I'll sit in your store tonight and see that the new material you ordered doesn't get lifted.
You take the suit, Mr. Diamond. You're being paid to protect it.
Okay.
And remember, it's new. Brand new. It would cost you $300 to duplicate it. So for the sake of your home and kiddies, don't stuff your big shoulders into it.
He gave me the key to his store and told me how to shut off the burglar alarm. He gave me the phone number where I could reach him that evening in case something happened, draped the blue suit over my arm, and hurried me out of the room like he was getting rid of a plague victim. I grabbed a cab, and 10 minutes later, I was unlocking the door to my apartment. I started to toss Mr. Barr's suit on the bed, but thought better of it, so I went to the closet, opened the door, and reached for a hanger. Now, unlike Mr. Barr's wardrobe, I generally sport a variety of items. A couple of sport coats, a few old Letterman sweaters to fill up the space, 4 pair of slacks, and usually, mind you, I say usually, 2 suits. One of which I was wearing at the moment. The other was a blue serge. Was right, because where my blue serge suit once was, it wasn't. That did it. First Barr loses everything in sight that happens to be blue serge, then I come home and find that one of the 2 suits I had to my name had been swiped. I burned. Barr could get dozens of suits and use them for bath mats when he got tired of wearing them. Me? I was going to have to sew sleeves on the bath mats. I called Barr at home, but he'd left. I thought about calling with the number he had given me, but decided against it. I sat down to try and figure it out. But a half a dozen camels later, I was still facing a big, fat zero. One thing was sure. I had Mr. Barr's last blue serge suit, and nobody was going to get it away from me. Big shoulders or not, I put it on and headed for Barr's shop on Madison Avenue. I never made it.
Hold it.
Hey, what is this? Well, I'm only considering it because you've got a gun in my back.
Walked under that sedan by the curb.
Oh, I get car sick.
You heard him.
Oh, fellas, I haven't been well. Doctor recommends lots of walking. Told me to stay away from cars.
No.
Oh, now look.
You heard him.
Yeah, I heard him. Would I be nosy if I asked?
Yeah, you would be very nosy.
How about you, friend?
You heard him.
Get in the back.
Look, can I interest you boys in a deal? My secret decoder and my ray gun, if you'll only... They were both big boys, and they both had big guns. One of them slugged me with one of the big guns, and my head swelled up to match the whole ugly situation. I went down and out faster than a left fielder trying to steal home with a charley horse, and they rolled me into the car.
We drove for a long time, me lying on the floor of the back seat, trying to bring myself back to a conscious way of thinking. Finally, I snapped out of it. They let me sit up and take a look around. We were on a lonely stretch of road, and although the car was green, not black, and didn't look anything like a hearse, I had a gloomy feeling that we were heading for a funeral.
Get out.
Now, look.
You heard him. Okay, okay.
Look, fellas, the least you can do is tell me...
Get out of that suit.
Get out of the suit?
You heard him.
Take it off. Take it off quick.
Well, I... Okay. Would you mind turning your backs?
You want to get belted again?
No. I'll take it off.
Take the coat, Hunt.
Yeah, Hunt. Here.
Now the pants. Come on.
Oh, all right. It's cold. I'm getting goosebumps.
And the pants.
There you are, Hunts. Oh, so you're the guys who've been after the blue serge suits.
Walk them off the road, Hunts.
Yeah, what if a car came by, me and my hand-painted shorts?
Get them off far enough so they won't find him right away.
Hmm?
Move!
Oh, now look.
You heard him.
Yeah, I sure did. I kept walking with Hunts right behind me, his big gun pointed to the middle of my back. I could stand losing my clothes, but I'd grown to enjoy my life. So I decided I'd have to get that gun away from Hunts somehow. We were 50 yards from the road when I tried it.
Give me that gun! Come on, give it to me! I guess you didn't hear what I said.
Hunts had tried his best to put a hole in me, but like most guys who think they've got a sure thing, he forgot a small item called luck. In this case, all of it on my side. I left him lying on his face in the moonlight and headed back for the car. But the other gunsel evidently saw my white shorts donning over the landscape and decided it was time to leave. I tried a shot at him and then went back to find Hunts and borrow a pair of pants. Sometimes when things happen that fast, a guy gets careless. Now, I'd figured Hunts, being wounded, would be in the same spot I left him. But when I got back to the spot, the one-sentence killer was nowhere in sight. Somewhere in the distance, I heard a branch snap, so I knew that Hunts was on his way back home. I was getting too cold in my undies to start chasing him, so I went back to the road and walked until I spotted a house. Any other time, I would have considered carefully before walking up to a front door, attired only in my underwear. Thank goodness they weren't blue serge. I figured I could say I was a cross-country runner with a bad sense of direction. I rang the doorbell and waited.
Yes?
Could I use your phone? Oh, shut up, Walt.
Boy, did you look silly when they dragged you in here.
Oh, I don't know. Otis thought it was a burlesque raid and asked me for a date.
Would you mind telling me what you were doing running around like that?
Well, that woman's husband was chasing me. What did you think I was doing?
Well, you can't blame the old man for chasing you. You scared his wife right out of her wig. Now, why don't you tell me what this is all about?
Because I don't know.
Well, how'd you lose your clothes?
Let me make a phone call and I'll tell you all about it. I put in a call to David Barr and asked him to meet me at the store. Then I briefed Walt on everything up to date. Walt said...
Are you nuts?
And I left before I had to lie. I went back to my apartment, climbed back into the only suit I had left, and 20 minutes later, I was standing in David Barr's shop on Madison Avenue. I explained the events of the last couple of hours, and Mr. Barr said...
Disgusting.
You bet.
I just can't understand
it. Move over.
Don't you have any theories at all?
Vague ones. That blue suit that you gave me. Tell me about it.
The material was originally ordered for a customer who failed to show up, so I had it made up for me.
Where did you get your cloth?
Black and Winterfield. Although I'm certain you've never enjoyed the benefit of their merchandise, you must have heard of them.
What customer was the material ordered for originally?
Oh, not one of my steady customers. He left a deposit.
Well, what was his name?
Kingsley. Leonard Kingsley, a small man with a preposterous stomach. I had to order 4 yards.
Well, this Mr. Kingsley, he's never called or gotten in touch with you?
No. So needing another blue suit, I use the material for myself. If he comes in, I can always order more material.
Didn't you take his measurements?
He was in a hurry. He picked out the serge from the book, gave me a deposit, and told me he'd be back that afternoon for the measurements. That was over a month ago. What are you driving at, Diamond?
That I know. I'm just fishing. The whole thing has got something to do with blue serge material and that blue suit.
You're getting disgustingly repetitious. I suppose you're going to tell me this Kingsley sent 2 hired killers to steal my goods because he thought it was easier than coming in for a fitting.
I know. Where's your phone?
On the desk. It's the only thing in the whole shop that looks anything like a phone. Honestly.
I got more of a description of Leonard Kingsley and put in a call to Walt, the precinct. I gave him the information, asked him to run a check. Then I said goodnight to Mr. Barr and settled back in a chair to guard the store. I'd been sleeping about an hour when Walt called back.
What do you know about this Leonard Kingsley, Diamond?
Oh, there's a brilliant question. Why do you think I called you up? I don't know anything. I want to find out.
Well, where did you hear about him?
From my client.
That bar guy you told me about?
That's right. This Leonard Kingsley came into his store, ordered a suit, never came back.
That was because he couldn't.
Come back?
Yeah. About a month ago, this Leonard Kingsley was killed in a car accident. Stepped off the curb and a car hit him.
You sure it was an accident?
Yep. Woman hit him. There was an inquest. Witnesses say it was all Kingsley's fault.
All right. What's the rest?
Rest?
Oh, stop with the little red riding hood. Something's up.
Well, this is confidential, Rick.
Well, it'll stay that way.
The FBI have got a share in this thing.
What?
It seems that when a check was run to find Kingsley's home and relatives, all of the credentials he had on him turned out to be phonies, particularly his passport.
What did the feds find out?
Kingsley was from one of the Iron Curtain countries. Espionage.
All right, all right. Well, Paul Revere with a shoulder holster.
I want some answers, DeBar. How many customers can you remember who came into your shop and ordered only one suit in the last year?
Half a dozen.
How many never came back after they got the one suit? Well, what's the matter?
That's peculiar. Everyone I can remember, and they're comparatively easy because most of my customers are steady.
Go on. What about these single customers?
Every one of them ordered a blue serge.
And you got all the material from Black and Winterfield?
Yes.
The whole thing was beginning to make sense. What better way of getting information out of the country than in the material of a suit? I dragged by down to the store again, got the names of all his single customers who had ordered blue serge suits. Then I went over to the 5th precinct and had Walt make a check on them. 2 hours later, the U.S. Customs Department sent in an interesting teletype.
Rick, every one of those guys have left the country and hasn't returned.
And 8 to 5, the FBI can find out plenty. Now, give them the information. Let's go over to Black and Winterfield. I want to take a look at that store. See if I can find out how anyone can hide any kind of information in 3.5 yards of blue serge.
Dark.
Yep, come on.
What do you think you're going to do?
Well, we're going in that store and take a look around.
You can't do that. Not without a warrant.
All right, Fatty, just so you won't disgrace that lovely badge, I'll go in first and you can come in and arrest me for breaking and entering.
Now, Rick, you wait a minute.
Walt, they know I got away. We can't wait. Hey.
What's the matter? What are you looking at?
That car in the alley.
What about it?
Looks like the one those 2 killers took me for a ride in. Come on.
Well?
Looks like it. Wait a minute. I took a shot at it. Maybe I can...
Wait, I'll light a match.
Uh-huh. Yes, sir, here it is. Nice little bullet hole.
Well, I'll be...
I think one of my little headhunters is in that building. Still want to get a warrant?
Let's go. How are we going to get in?
Oh, you'll figure something out. You're really a second-story man at heart.
Rick, wait a minute.
What is it?
Look at this. Isn't it blood?
Looks like both of them are here. Leads right in the door.
Locked.
Let's go around back. We ducked around back and spent the next 10 minutes jimmying the window. And Walt couldn't have been more professional if he'd done time in Sing Sing. He jammed it without a sound and knew just how to disconnect the alarm. We squeezed through and dropped to the floor. We were in a basement, and from somewhere in another part of the building, we could hear a radio playing softly. We went up the steps to the first floor and stopped to listen. The radio was to our left, down a long corridor. We stayed against the wall and edged our way toward a door at the end of the hall. A thin strip of light showed at the crack, and we moved up and listened, holding our breath.
How are you feeling, Hunch? Well, try and take it easy. And the boss is coming with the doc.
They're both in there.
Let's take them.
Hold it.
Music making you feel better, huh?
No. No, Gabe.
Well, you want something better, maybe? Ari Shaw, pick you up, maybe?
No. Turn it off.
Okay. Now, don't you worry. I'll get that shaman for shooting you. And the boss will be real happy when he sees we got the suit.
Okay, let's take him, Walt.
Look out behind you, Rick.
It all happened so fast there wasn't any time to think. Suddenly, there were two men standing behind us in the hall. By the time the smoke cleared, both of them were down, and Walt and I were shaking like a hula dancer with a hot foot. Then, before we could catch our breath, Gabe came running out.
I'll get him, Rick.
No, no, I'll get him. You go in and take care of the wounded one. Walt went in after Hunts, and I took off after the other. I caught him just as he dove through the front door. Hold it.
Okay. I'm bleeding.
All right, let's have it.
I'm bleeding. Get a doctor.
The ambulance is on the way. Now, tell us about it.
What do you want to know?
We want to know about the suits and about the material. And who the guys are in the hall.
One of them's a doctor for Huntsia. The other one's the boss. He runs the store.
You were getting information out of the country and the Blue Surge material.
Yeah.
What kind of information?
All kinds. Defense plans, radar locations, that kind of stuff. Done all in code numbers.
How did they do it?
Stuff was invisible, like, just do it on the Blue Surge. When the guy got out of the country, he'd take the suit and dip it in something. Then the right and come out.
And when Kingsley got hit by the car, you found out he didn't have the suit?
The boss did. How about it, Hunts? How do you feel?
Why did you swipe my suit?
We was tailing Barr. Saw him going to your office. Figured maybe he'd give you the suit.
Well, there it is, Rick.
How about it, Hunts? Your partner telling the truth?
You heard him.
Come away with me, Lucille, in my merry old mobile.
Down the road of life we'll fly, autumn of bubbling, you and I.
And to the church we'll swiftly steal, then our wedding bells will peal.
You can go as far as you like with me
in my merry old mobile. If you want to see your car that's really full of sex appeal,
if you please,
come out riding in my jazzy, jazzy old mobile.
Oh, you can.
And if I should steal a kiss and tell me that you won't be busted,
don't get too big for your goggles and your linen duster buster.
On the menu of romance, you are my very favorite course.
Oh, skidoo, with that corny line of yours, you really ought to get a horse.
No, it's too hard to like this pretty wedding ring.
Well, now, that's a very different thing.
In my merry old mo.
What a happy pair without a single care.
Merry old mo.
What a grand machine, a double peachy keen.
Merry old mo.
It's hydromatic, just like you.
What do you mean?
Why, the car is shiftless, too.
There's no clutch.
Well, what about me?
Ah, when I park, both hands will be free.
And not for long.
What a body. It's all streamlined.
Thank you.
With a little spare tire behind.
Hand
in glove down the road of love in my merry old mo.
L-O-V-E.
In my merry old mo.
O-U-Q-T.
In our merry old mo.
Sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.